Well, good afternoon once again. I appreciate Mr. Reeves' message. I appreciate everybody being here. And nice, the weather has cooperated well. We had a little bit of rain last week, and now it's just really nice. I think about 70, 75 outside. So appreciate those, everybody staying and those who are outside. I want to begin this afternoon with a quick rundown of the seven purposes for fasting. Now, I'm only going to give one verse with each one, maybe two on one of them. But it will give you a framework and an outline. And if you want to take some time for extra Bible study this afternoon or later in your life, later in the week, whatever, you can find many verses to add to this framework. But I will just give you one verse for each one. But it's important as we fast that we think about why we are fasting, what purpose God has in it, and what we are trying to accomplish. So for a quick rundown, number one, the first purpose we have for fasting, and these are not necessarily in order of importance, they're simply in seven different steps. Number one is to obtain help from God. Let's go to Ezra chapter 8 and verse 21. Sometimes in life we are not able to do everything we want to without God's help. That's kind of like every day at all times. But there are times when there are urgent situations, when there's a medical need, when there are other needs, perhaps many of us have faced unemployment. I remember facing that a few times way back in the earlier days when my wife was pregnant. We had a an economy that was nosediving in the Tri-Cities. So there are times when you have to fast and just ask for God's help because it's a very special need. And so you say, I'm going to have to fast and set aside some time to obtain extra help from God. There are many Bible examples of this. Esther is one I'm sure you're all familiar with. But let's look at verse 21 of chapter 8 of Ezra. It says, I proclaimed a fast at the river Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God, to seek from him the right way for us and our little ones and all our possessions. So Ezra prayed and asked God through fasting that God would give them the right way for themselves and their little ones, making the trip to Jerusalem. For I was ashamed to request of the king an escort of soldiers and horsemen to help us against the enemy on the road, because we had spoken to the king, saying, the hand of our God is upon us for good, for those who seek him, his power and his wrath and against those who forsake him. Verse 23, we fasted and entreated our God for this, and he answered our prayers. So Ezra needed help. He needed help from God to be able to make this 600-mile trip across the desert that was full of bandits and people who might try to kill them or take all their possessions, and God answered his request. So to obtain help from God is the number one reason that I want to think about today. Secondly is to increase our faith. Let's go to Matthew chapter 17. Nothing is impossible for God, but sometimes our faith is stronger than it is at other times. Somebody's calling. So, yeah, try to hit the mute button. There we go. All right. So the second purpose then is to increase our faith. The disciples were just people like you and I. And even though they had Jesus Christ with them very, you know, closely all day, every day it seemed like, except the days when he might be separated for a reason, they still needed to increase their faith. Matthew chapter 17 and verse 14. When they had come to the multitude, a man came to him, kneeling down to him, saying, Lord, I have mercy on my son, for he is an epileptic and suffers severely, for he often falls into the fire and often into the water. So I brought him to your disciples, but they could not cure him. When Jesus answered and said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long will I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? And bring him here to me. So Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of him, and the child was cured from that very hour. And the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, why could we not cast him out? So the disciples had tried. They had tried to cast out the demon. They had prayed about it. And Jesus said to them, because of your unbelief, for surely I say to you, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. And nothing will be impossible for you. However, this kind does not go out except by prayer and fasting. And so fasting here is indicated as a way to increase our faith, increase our response from God in the sense that he will answer our prayers because we humble ourselves and come closer to him. So an increase in our faith is the second reason. Sometimes we come to the place where we just feel a little bit bland spiritually, if you know what I mean. We kind of get worn out. Our prayers are not as good as they should be. Our Bible study is not as rewarding. Those are times when you might just set aside a day to fast and try to get yourself back on a spiritual even keel. Number three, simply turning to God when we have strayed. Let's go to Joel chapter 2 and verse 1. Turning to God when we have strayed. So right after Hosea is the book of Joel. Joel's an interesting book. Certainly a lot about the day of the Lord and a lot about the return of Christ and a nationwide call to repentance. In Joel chapter 2, God is dealing with the day of the Lord and what people should be doing as we see that day approaching, and certainly with the challenges that our nation and the world are facing today, it might be a good indication that it's time for us to begin doing this in a very earnest fashion. Verse 12 of Joel chapter 2, "Now therefore, says the Lord, turn to me with all your heart, with fasting and with weeping and with mourning. Rend your heart and not your garments." So he says, return to the Lord. So fasting here is a tool to return to the Lord, for God is gracious and merciful, slow to anger and of great kindness, and he relents from doing harm. It says, who knows if he'll return and relent and leave a blessing from behind. So simply turning back to God, fasting is an important tool. And it's important that we understand God wanted us to fast and humble ourselves and turn to him before we go to the Feast of Tabernacles and live a little better than normal. We have a month's worth of, about almost 5 weeks worth of income to spend in 1 week. And so we have maybe a little more steak and cheesecake and expensive wine and those things than we normally have at dinner. So that can cause us to feel a little bit assured of ourselves. Too much money causes people to be arrogant, causes them to think highly of themselves, more highly than they ought to think. So humbling ourselves before going to the feast is a very important thing. I think it's why God designed the Day of Atonement in line as the holy day before we go to the Feast of Tabernacles. So here we have turning to God and going back to him if we have strayed. Okay, number four is to obtain power and strength because we are helpless to face Satan on our own. Let's go to Matthew chapter 4 and verse 2. So our example here, there are many other scriptures that give examples of people doing this or why we should do this. But Matthew chapter 4 and verse 2, Jesus Christ fasted 40 days and 40 nights. And he fasted not because it's just an option, but because he wanted strength given to him through God's Spirit, from God the Father, so that he would be able to win the battle, this titanic battle of wills with Satan the devil. Matthew chapter 4 and verse 2. I'll start in verse 1. When Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil, and when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights afterward, he was hungry. And when the tempter came to him, he said, "You are the Son of God. If you are, make these stones as bread." Now, there is some tradition in the Jewish historians, I didn't bring the reference with me, that this confrontation between Satan the devil and Christ took place on the Day of Atonement, and that's why making the bread would have been, and eating it would have been a sin. It's not sin just to eat bread per se, but also giving in to Satan's suggestion and temptation would by itself have been a sin. But I think it's interesting that very likely this also took place on the same holy day that we are keeping today. But Jesus Christ fasted to obtain power to resist Satan the devil. And sometimes that is the only option we have, especially in today's time of addictions and satanic influences that are everywhere. They're everywhere on the entertainment media. We live in a land that has crossed that line into the area of decadence. And the historians who have traced it back to the times when our entertainment industry began feeding people a lot of immorality mixed with humor, because humor has a way of disarming any resistance you might have or any walls of objection. And so the entertainment industry may be perhaps more guilty than any other aspect of society when it comes to moving our society to the point of decadence from which no nation has ever survived. And if we look at the turmoil going on in our nation today, its roots go back to a decadent society and making fun of God, making light of things like adultery, stealing, murder, and having all of those things as form of entertainment. Okay, number five, the fifth reason that we fast is to learn how to love others. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 58 and verse 6. To learn how to love others. We are to be a light to the world. We are to be the salt of the earth. And we are to be an example of the good works to our fellow man. And Paul tells us in Galatians to have do good to everyone, especially to those of the household of faith. So we should be doing good to everyone, if at all possible. But notice what he says in Isaiah chapter 58, beginning in verse 6. Well, let's start in verse 5. That's where the fasting, this part of it comes in. Is it a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul, to bow down his head like a bulrush, and to spread out like sackcloth and ashes? Would you call this fast an acceptable day of the Lord? He's asking the question, what is an acceptable fast? Is an acceptable fast a day where you continue just to do all your own work and your mind is simply occupied by your normal duties and, you know, finances, that type of thing? Well, it really isn't. God wants us to set some time aside for the spiritual aspect of why we are fasting. And, of course, today is a day of conclave of services together and being able then to think about the spiritual things on a higher level. Is this not the fast that I have chosen? This is what God chose, to loose the bonds of wickedness. In other words, to overcome sin and to forgive the sin that's already been committed. Number two, to undo the heavy burdens, because sin is a burden. To let the oppressed go free, that you break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry? In other words, learn to be generous and sharing. That you bring to the house the poor who are cast out. And when you see the naked, that you cover him. This is what Jesus later would say, or actually Mr. Reeves read earlier today, that when was I naked and you brought me clothes? When was I hungry and you fed me? It says, not hide yourself from your own flesh. Then your light shall break forth like the morning. Your healing shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you, and the glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. In other words, God will have your back. The glory of God will protect us. So here we have, in this section of fasting, there's much more in this chapter about it, that part of the purpose is to learn to fear, or learn to love others, learn to properly treat our fellow man. Now, number six, and I think we all have come to this place, is to obtain wisdom from God to make the right decisions. There are several good examples of this in the scriptures, but let's go to Acts chapter 14 and verse 23. Acts chapter 14 and verse 23. We all have decisions to make in life that are very important. All the way from who you're going to marry to what kind of education you're going to get. There's certainly very important decisions to make, certainly the most important about being baptized and committing yourself to God. But God says we can go to him in fasting and ask for help in making the right decision. Acts chapter 14 and verse 23. So when they had appointed elders at every church and prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they believed. So this verse is about choosing men to be ordained. That it is not a light decision. It's done after much prayer and fasting. And when a minister recommends to the home office, to church administration, that someone is to be ordained an elder, on the form it says, I have fasted and prayed about this. I've set aside days to fast about this decision. So no elder is ordained without certainly a lot of fasting ahead of time or some fasting ahead of time and seeking for God's will and for, you know, God's choice to be made. So it's something very important to apply. Now, you know, God is not limited. Some decisions that might really bother Mr. Reeves might not bother me. I mean, let me give you an example. So it's not wrong to ask. What I'm trying to say is it's not wrong to ask for God's help in even sort of minor decisions. So I had a friend up here in North Clark County a number of years ago named Carl. And he had a big barn. He lived on a small farm outside of, it's kind of west of, east of LaCenter and up the hill a little ways. And he had a large barn that he had inherited this farm from his mother who had just died. And he'd been living out there with her for many years. And anyway, this storm came along and blew down about half the barn. It's a great big gambrel-shaped barn, and I think they must have been 80 or 100 feet long. It's a very valuable barn, and he used it for some cattle and things. But I went out there, and the whole metal was down, and some of the beams were broken, and you know, the wind had done a great deal of damage to the barn. And he said, "I just don't know what to do about this barn. I said, it's going to be expensive to rebuild it, and I can use it, but you know, what should I do about it?" And he said, "I just can't make the decision." So I said, "Well, if the decision is really bothering," he said, "I can't even sleep." I said, "Well, why don't you just fast and pray about it?" So we did. He fasted and he prayed about it. And he called me up in about 2 weeks. He said, "Well, God answered my prayer." I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, another storm came along and blew down the rest of the barn." So in his understanding then, the God's answer was, "You don't need the barn, tear it down." So he was very happy with that decision and didn't have to worry about rebuilding his barn. But at any rate, we have the open invitation from God that he will help us with decisions. And that's very important because he wants us to make the right decisions. He does not want us to make the wrong ones. And sometimes when we know there's going to be a lot of decisions to make, it's good just to fast ahead of time. Such as when we have camp and we have, as a director, I have a lot of decisions to make at camp. We always try to seek God ahead of time and say, "Please help me to handle all the things that come up, that we make the right decisions, that things would go well," and ask for God's blessing. So the final reason to fast is that simply God says to. God tells us to fast. So let's go to Matthew 6 and verse 18. Matthew 6 and verse 18. We already read about the fast that God has chosen. And there are places all through the scriptures where the examples of God's servants are very clear, that they fasted, that God answered their prayers, not only with Esther, Daniel chapter 9. Daniel's fasting and praying to God for many days brought us the greatest detailed prophecy in the Bible, Daniel chapter 11 through 12. And we have so many examples of God answering the fasting of his servants, but he also tells us that we should. Verse 17 of Matthew chapter 6, "You, when you fast," it's not given in an optional way, it's given as in a declarative way. "When you fast, anoint your head and wash your face." In other words, dress normal. Don't pretend that you're fasting. "So that you do not appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. Do not lay up for yourselves treasure on earth." So your Father in heaven will see that you're fasting, but nobody else needs to see that we are fasting. But this is one of a number of places in the scripture where it is an assumed truth that God's servants will be fasting. And when Christ was asked by the Pharisees, "Why don't your servants fast like the Pharisees do?" he says, "Well, they have me with them now, but when I'm gone, they will fast." I'm paraphrasing, but that's exactly what he said. "When I'm gone, they will be fasting." So now I want to turn to a very powerful response of fasting on this Day of Atonement, but many, many, many years ago. I want to go back first to Exodus chapter 33. You are all familiar with the story of what happened at Mount Sinai. I know you are because you've all seen the Ten Commandments movie. And you've also read the story many times and heard it preached about many times. But in Exodus chapter 33, this is after Moses had spent 40 days and 40 nights on Mount Sinai, and God had given him the Ten Commandments written by God's own hand on the tablets of stone. And during that absence, the people's faith became very weak. As you know, they have the instance of the golden calf. They began to celebrate with some sort of a party. Some would call it an orgy, I suppose. But here they were free. They were no longer slaves. And sometimes when people are released from slavery or a control, the self-control that they should have developed is not there, because they've been relying on somebody else's control. So who knows, there's lots of excuses, but the answer is it was a very heinous sin. So Moses comes down from the mountain, and he sees these people dancing around his calf and all the various things they're doing. And then, of course, the Levites gathered to him. But then verse 35 of the previous chapter, Exodus chapter 32, the Lord plagued the people because of what they did with calf, which Aaron made. Now, tradition is that it was the kind of the ringleaders, all those who were really organizing it and getting everybody else to get involved in this, were the ones that died. We really don't know that from the scriptures, but it certainly would make sense. The Lord said to Moses, chapter 33 and verse 1, "Depart and go up from here, you and the people you have brought up out of the land of Egypt to the land I swore Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to give you your descendants. God says, I'll send my angel before you. He says, you are a stiff-necked people in verse 3. But in verse 7, this is the important kind of the change here that happens. Moses took his tent and pitched it outside the camp. So the camp of Israel was at the foot of Mount Sinai. Moses took his camp and went, let's just guess, a quarter mile away, a half mile away, outside the camp, and set up the tent of Moses. Now, there was no tabernacle built at this time. That would come later. But Moses took his tent, pitched it outside the camp and from the camp, and called it the tabernacle of meeting. So God simply would not have his presence among this group of millions of sinners. And so he took his tent and said, Moses, I'll meet with you out there. And it came to pass that everyone who sought the Lord went out to the tabernacle of meeting, which was outside the camp. I think what really happened is they asked Moses to go there for them, and then God met with him. Because it says, whenever Moses went out to the tabernacle, that all the people rose, and each man stood at the door of his tent and watched Moses until he had gone into the tabernacle. So they know now that God has left them. He's up on the mountain. He's separated himself from them because of their sin. And when Moses goes up there, Moses has everybody stand in front of their tent and watch. And that's kind of a lesson, a time of introspection, a time of realizing how sinful they had been. Verse 9, it came to pass when Moses entered the tabernacle that the pillar of cloud descended and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord talked to Moses. So when God came down to talk to Moses, the people could all see the pillar of smoke or the pillar of fire that was covered in smoke that was there at the tabernacle symbolizing God's presence. And they understood that God was not dwelling with them. He would only meet with Moses. Verse 11, so the Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend, and he would return to the camp. But his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, did not depart from the tabernacle. So Joshua, the son of Nun, was kind of like the doorkeeper. He didn't go in, but he didn't go back down to the camp either. He stayed there and was kind of the protector of Moses' tent. Verse 12, Moses said to the Lord, see, you say to me, bring up this people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. Yet you have said, I know you by name, and you have also found grace in my sight. Now therefore I pray, if I have found grace in your sight, show me now your way, that I may know you, and I may find grace in your sight, and consider that this nation is your people. He said, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. Then he said to him, if your presence does not go with us, do not bring us up from here. For how will it be known for your people that I have found grace in your sight, except you go with us? We shall be separate, your people and I, from all the people who are upon the face of the earth. And so we have Moses appealing that God would essentially reunite with the people of Israel. And of course, there would be conditions for that. Then right after that, God reveals himself to him in the cleft of the rock. Actually, he has him go up on a rock there in some way. But chapter 34, the Lord said to Moses, cut two tablets of stone like the first ones, and I'll write on these tablets like the first tablets you wrote that were broken. So be ready in the morning and come up in the morning to Mount Sinai and present yourself to me there on the mountain. So verse 4, Moses cut two more tablets of stone like the first ones, rose up in the morning, and went to Mount Sinai as the Lord commanded him, and he took in his stone the two tablets of stone. Now, Moses is going back up the mountain. At this point, God is not committed to be reunited with the people of Israel. He is dwelling out away from the camp. So to understand some of the details that occurred here, let's go back over to Deuteronomy chapter 9. Now, this was very personal for Moses, and as this book of Deuteronomy is written in his last month of his life, he then gives us some details in Deuteronomy 9 and 10 that are not contained in the chronicle in the book of Exodus. Deuteronomy chapter 8, chapter 9, let's begin in verse 1. Hear, O Israel, you are about to cross over the Jordan today and go into dispossessed nations greater and mightier than yourself, cities great and fortified up to heaven. A people great and tall, the descendants of the Anakim, whom you know and of whom you heard it said, who can stand before the descendants of Anak? Therefore, understand today that the Lord your God is he who goes over before you as a consuming fire. He will destroy them and bring them down before you, and you shall drive them out and destroy them quickly, as the Lord has said. Now, he's telling them the Lord is going with you. You are reunited with God. Then he goes back and tells, he reviews the history of how they sinned and then God was reunited with them, or how they became reunited to have God lead them into the promised land. Verse 4, do not think in your heart after the Lord your God has cast them out before you, saying, because of my righteousness. Don't take credit for yourself. The Lord has brought me in to possess this land. It is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is driving them out from before you. And those sins are listed in Leviticus 18 and a few other places. It is not because of your righteousness. It says God is giving you their land because of their incorrigible sin and because of the promises, of course, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord your God drives them out from before you, that he may fulfill the word which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So Moses is warning these people, don't think it's all about you. Now, wouldn't it be wonderful if the people of America understood that we had the blessings we have because of the promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the promises that have been brought down to us, the promise of greatness of the descendants of Joseph. It isn't because of our righteousness or our greatness that it has happened. Verse 6, therefore understand that the Lord your God is not giving you this land to possess because of your righteousness, for you are a stiff-necked people. Don't forget, remember, do not forget how you provoked the Lord your God to wrath in the wilderness. From the day you departed from the land of Egypt until you came to this place, you have been rebellious against the Lord. He's rehearsing some of their 10 different major rebellions that are chronicled for us in the books of Exodus and Numbers. Also in Horeb, you provided the Lord to wrath. The Lord was angry with you and would have destroyed you. Now, here's the important part of the story. We are now going up, we're kind of dovetailing back into the account in Exodus 33. When I went up into the mountain to receive the tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant which the Lord made with you, then I stayed on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water. So he fasted 40 days and 40 nights. Obviously, he had to have God's strength to be able to do that. Then the Lord delivered to me the two tablets written with the finger of God. And on them were all the words which the Lord had spoken to you on the mountain from the midst of the fire in the day of the assembly. In other words, the Ten Commandments, the words they heard before they said, Moses, separate and go talk to God by yourself and tell us what he says after their fear. Notice, it came to pass at the end of the 40 days and 40 nights that the Lord gave me the two tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant. And the Lord said to me, arise, go down quickly from here, for your people whom you brought out of Egypt have acted corruptly, and they have quickly turned aside from the way which I commanded you, and they have made for themselves a molten image, meaning, of course, the golden calf. Furthermore, the Lord spoke to me, saying, I have seen this people, and indeed they are a stiff-necked people. Let me alone, that I may destroy them and blot them out of their name from heaven, and I'll make a nation of you greater than they. So Moses told him God had rejected them. They were a stiff-necked people, and he was willing to blot them out. So I turned and came down from the mountain, and the mountain burned with fire, and the two tablets in my hand were two tablets of the covenant were in my hand. I looked, and behold, you had sinned against the Lord your God. You had made for yourselves a golden calf, and you had turned aside quickly from the way which the Lord had commanded you. Now keep in mind that most of the people who did this were dead. Those who were 20 and older were all gone, except for Joshua and Caleb. So he's reminding them at the end of this wilderness that they were this kind of people, and they were the descendants of those sinners. And no doubt some 18 and 19-year-olds were involved in some of these things. But the sin and the responsibility for that sin was still upon them. He says that I took the two tablets and threw them out of my hands and broke them before your eyes. And I fell down before the Lord as at the first, 40 days and 40 nights. So this verse 18 is after he had gone up, after God separated himself, Moses went up there, and Moses said to him, you know, how can we go into the land without you coming with us? And then Moses then went, God told him, take two more tablets and go back up the mountain. And so Moses went back up after this time of about we're going to guess maybe a week or 2 weeks. How we figure that is this. The Ten Commandments were given to begin with on the day of Pentecost. And then Moses went up the mountain, gets the commandments on stones, come down. So you're looking at, if Pentecost was June 1st, let's just pick a likely date, June 1st. It would be about 40 days later, it would be July 10th, or along in there, about July 10th, when he comes back down, breaks it, sees the golden calf, breaks the tablets. And then there's some time while Moses puts his tabernacle up outside the camp. He goes in and out, people watch him, they stand in front of their tents, and there's a few days taking place there, maybe 2 weeks as much. Anyway, then he comes back, God tells him, take two more tablets and go back up the mountain for 40 more days. And at the end of that 40 days is the Day of Atonement. So that's how it's clear there's only about 2 weeks between the time of the when Moses comes down to the golden calf and when he goes back up. The purpose of this second trip back up the mountains was simply to fast and ask God to forgive the Israelites and make them and come back to their camp. That's over in chapter 10. Let's begin in verse 1. Chapter 10 and verse 1. At that time the Lord said to me, hew for yourselves two tablets of stone, like the first. And we just read that over in the book of Exodus, so we can dovetail these two verses. And come up to me on the mountain and make yourself an ark of wood. And I will write on the tablets the words that were on the first, which you broke, and you shall put them in the ark. So I made an ark of acacia wood, hewed two tablets of stone like the first, and went up to the mountain having the two tablets in my hand. And he wrote on the tablets, according to the first writing, the Ten Commandments, which the Lord had spoken to you in the mountain from the midst of the fire in the day of the assembly, and the Lord gave them to me. So God used his finger and once again wrote the Ten Commandments on these two tablets of stone. Then I turned and came down from the mountain and put the tablets in the ark which I had made, and there they are, just as the Lord commanded me. So then he says at verse 8, at that time the Lord separated the tribe of Levi to bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord and to stand before the Lord to minister unto him. And of course, a little bit farther on, verse 9, he says that Levi has no portion nor inheritance with his brethren, and Lord has this inheritance just as the Lord your God had promised him. As at the first time, I stayed in the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. The Lord also heard me at that time, and the Lord chose not to destroy you. It was because of Moses' fasting for that second 40 days and 40 nights that God chose not to destroy them, but instead to be reunited with them, I guess you would say, to lead them into the promised land. And the Lord said to me, arise, begin your journey before the people, that they may go in and possess the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. And now, Israel, what does the Lord require of you? God says, after all of this, Moses is telling them, is because of my prayers of intervention for you that God requires this now of you. But to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways and love him, and to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul, and to keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command you today for your good. So these are the requirements for God to be united with us and for him to lead us, not just into the wilderness or through the wilderness into the promised land, but into his kingdom, which is the real promised land. What does God require to be dwelling in us, you might say, because that's what it is. God was dwelling with Israel, but because of their sins, he left. He says, now I will come back and dwell with you because of Moses' fasting and prayer. But these are the requirements. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart. Fear him. Serve the Lord your God with all your heart and soul. Keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command you to say for good. Verse 14, indeed, heaven and the highest heavens belong to the Lord your God, also the earth and all that in it is. The Lord delighted only in your fathers to love them, and he chose their descendants after them, you above all peoples, as it is this day. Therefore, circumcise the foreskin of your heart and be stiff-necked no longer. For the Lord your God is the God of gods, the Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, and shows no partiality, nor takes a bribe. And now in verse 20, you shall fear the Lord your God, and you shall serve him. And to him you shall hold fast and take oaths in his name. And so the fasting of Moses resulted in that Day of Atonement on the restoration of the people of Israel to their God. And certainly fasting in the Day of Atonement, becoming at one again, have deep meanings in all of the, and in that application. And it's one that we can take spiritually because God wants to be reunited with us or united with us and let us or lead us into the promised land just like he did them, only our promised land is the coming kingdom of God that the world needs very soon. So I want to end on one more scripture, Leviticus 25. There's one more aspect to the Day of Atonement. And it's a very joyful aspect. It is announcing that this is now going to be a jubilee. It is going to be a wonderful time because Satan is put away. The world no longer has that temptation, that evil being running around and causing all the trouble that he's been causing for so many years, for 6,000 years. Verse 9, when you shall cause the trumpet of the jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. The 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement, you shall make the trumpet to sound throughout all your land. Because that trumpet on the Day of Atonement, the Jubilee, symbolized Satan's no longer here. We are now free to obey God. We are free from all of those evils of this society, and a new age truly can begin. You shall consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land and all its inhabitants. And that verse is inscribed on the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Sadly, we've forgotten about that as a nation, but it is still there and a reminder that God's Jubilee year on the Day of Atonement is when this great announcement will take place for all the earth. It shall be a jubilee for you, and each of you shall return to his possession and return each of you to his own family. And so this announcement about the Jubilee year and what it portrays in a spiritual sense is going to be happening on a Day of Atonement in the future. We all look forward to that. Look forward to a time when all the earth is then declared free from Satan and free from being separate from God. And because of their fasting and prayers, because of our fasting and prayers also, we can be reunited with God forever, symbolized as a day of being at one, the Day of Atonement.